seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Thursday. 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Reminder, thank you to everybody who came out to trivia last night at the City Sports Grill in Colchester. Another great success out there. And tomorrow, it'll be another great success broadcasting live from Goodwater Brewery in Williston. Come on by. We'll be there from 4 till 7. It's on Marshall Ave. It's in Williston. It's easily accessible. It is a great spot. A lot of fun. I've been there before. Can't wait to get back there tomorrow. The beer is excellent. The swag they're selling is excellent. They've got food options as well. It is a really fun time over at Goodwater Brewery. So it's the second leg of the 101.3 ESPN Winter Craft Beer Tour. As for what's coming up on the show today, Ryan Scott, D3Hoops.com, he's going to join us at 6:20. We'll talk a little bit of Plattsburgh as they get ready for the Suniac tournament to kick off tomorrow in Plattsburgh when they take on my Oswego Lakers. We'll also talk about Middlebury and if they have a chance to get to the NCAA tournament. We'll talk about where the NHL dropped the ball yet again. We'll get into that at 6:40. And Christian Vasquez speaks up and on the right side of the new MLB pace of play rules. But first, last night, the gold medal game between the U.S. and Canada, it showed you everything that you love about sports. And it also showed you everything that rips your heart out about sports. Last night was just the absolute roller coaster of emotions if you are a fan of sports. Good and bad, seeing both sides. 802-655-6672. You can get in on the Town Fair Tire text line. Now, look, don't get me wrong. I was rooting for the USA. I'd be sitting here lying to you if I told you I was a diehard hockey fan. I'd be sitting here lying to you if I told you that I have watched every prelim game leading up to the Olympics, every world championship game that this team has played. I have not. But I've been following Amanda Pelkey's story for the better part of a year and a half. I've been following this team's journey for the better part of the last 8 months. And it's been exciting to watch that progression. And I've made it a point to watch pretty much every Olympic game that they have played or highlights of every Olympic game that they have played. I was rooting for the U.S., but also what I love about sports is stories, is storylines, are angles. And when you take away, you know, when you go into a matchup without pure fandom, again, I was rooting for the U.S. last night because I root for the U.S. when the U.S. plays other countries. I was rooting for Amanda Pelkey because we've gotten to know Amanda Pelkey, and she's a friend of the show, and she's come on a bunch. But when you take away the fandom of who you're rooting for, okay, I just appreciate stories. And last night gave you everything about sports. I mean, start with this. For the U.S., you have the players. You have 10 players who were on the roster in Sochi in 2014, who lost the gold medal in overtime. You have those 10 players who spent the next 4 years living for last night. And that is an unbelievable story. Unbelievable how, we talk about the World Series and the Super Bowl. You train for that every year. You train for that opportunity every single year. And you may not get it every year. You may never get it. But you have the opportunity at it every single season. The Olympics come through once every 4 years, and those 10 women on that team spent the last 4 years every day thinking about last night. And, man, what a story that is. And then you've got 6 of them that were on the team in Vancouver in 2010 that have had to deal with multiple failures in the gold medal contest, multiple losses to Canada, and that redemption and that sweet revenge, that is a story that shows you everything you love about sports. The perseverance, the overcoming of obstacles, the coming back from failure, all of those things are what we love about sports. If you love storylines in sports, that's one of the ones that you love. Then you look at last night's game, you have those same 10 players that lived with the heartbreak in Sochi, seeing the game play out almost exactly like the one in Sochi did. The U.S. has a lead. The U.S. blows the lead. You can see it coming. You see the sense of finality is possible of creeping in, that, man, we're going to blow a lead again and lose to this exact same team. Then you tie the game, and then you go to overtime, where you lost in 2014, and you give up a penalty, which is the same thing that you did in 2014, and you have to deal with those demons creeping in and that potential thought of doubt creeping in. I mean, again, the overcoming of obstacles, the overcoming of failure, the mental toughness to not allow doubt to creep into your mind as you're playing, that is powerful, powerful stuff. And then it goes much bigger than that. I told you I've been following this team for the better part of 8 months, and the reason why is because it was April when this team threatened to sit out the World Championships. And we had Amanda Pelkey on right after. This team threatened to boycott the World Championships in an Olympic year over wages and treatment that they wanted to be equal to the men. They wanted to be able to treat hockey as a full-time job and not one of many side jobs, which is what Amanda Pelkey told me that she had to do to make this dream a reality. This wasn't able to be full-time because it just didn't pay enough. So this team, with all of those goals and all of that revenge factor and all of everything that they wanted to accomplish, they threatened to sit out, and they won that. They beat USA Hockey and got what they wanted. And then they parlayed that into winning a world championship and winning a gold medal. That is powerful stuff. Look, I don't have a sister. I don't have a daughter. But when you talk about, they didn't just win a gold medal last night. When you go back to 8 months ago, they had a win for women's sports and for women everywhere. And that is far more powerful and far wider reaching than, quote, just, end quote, a gold medal. I mean, that storyline of going up against your own country for equal treatment, winning, and then winning the gold medal, and not that they would have needed to win to justify that struggle, but to have that validation in people's minds who said that they don't deserve the same treatment as men because they don't bring in the revenue that the men's team does. They don't have the NHL players that the men's team did. Then they validated all that to them last night. And again, that is powerful, powerful stuff. You have the players from that started playing because of the 1998 win. The last time the U.S. won a gold medal in women's hockey was in the 1998 Nagano Olympics. You have players on that team that were born into hockey, or their love of hockey was born because of that team and because of what that team accomplished and because of what that team did. And you just start to, like, it gives me chills to think about how many players last night around this country between the ages of, I don't know, 3 and 10 were sitting and thinking, I want to do that. I want to experience that. And how many doors did they open up last night for young girls that want to get into sports and want to get into Olympic sports and want to get into Olympic hockey? That is a powerful thing. Look, I was rooting all along for the U.S. because I'm an American. And I have a, you know, we in this area have a connection to the team. But also in sports, I appreciate storylines. And last night was rife with them. How about this? You talk about those players who spent the last 4 years training every day, living with the memories of failing in Sochi, and all of it comes down to a 20-year-old goaltender. You have all of these Olympic veterans, all of these veterans who their whole life has hinged on trying to win a gold medal, and it all ends up coming down to a 20-year-old goaltender who's never experienced the failure of the Olympics. And it's on her shoulders to stop the game-winning shot. And you have all of these women who have put all of their time, all of this resources, all of their energy into winning a gold medal, and someone who wasn't a part of most of that and wasn't old enough to experience most of it, she becomes the hero at the very last moment. It's powerful, powerful stuff. It's Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. We're about 8 minutes away from Ryan Scott of D3Hoops.com. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. And don't forget this. Again, I told you I was rooting for the Americans, but because I like storylines and I understand them and I try to understand them, don't think that this wasn't a powerful game for the Canadians either. Like, this isn't just, ha, 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 we won, we're better than you, ha, ha, ha. Think about what happened on the Canadian side. You have those players faced with the burden and the expectation of living up to a tradition that's been set over the last 16 years. I mean, the Canadians have won 24 consecutive games in the Olympics. You don't want to, you go to work every day, go to practice every day, knowing that you carry the burden of a country and the expectation of a whole nation to go and win that gold medal. And anything less than that is a failure. And that is a hard position to be in when you know you carry that expectation. You know you wear that burden around your neck, and then you're not able to deliver. That's powerful, too. You talk about the thrill of victory and the agony of defeat. That's what it stems from, not being able to live up to that expectation, being that team that loses, being that team that gets beaten, and gets beaten at what is supposed to be your sport. I mean, Robin Flynn joined us in the huddle, and she talked to us about just how much that country, how much Canada was invested in this team and just how much last night meant to them.
Oh, they are so invested. I think especially this time around because there's no NHL players playing the men's side, whereas all the best of the best for the women are competing. So you are getting the most phenomenal talent on the ice right now. And Canadians are so invested. Canadians, you know, there's nothing that matters more than hockey up here in Canada.
So that was Robin Flynn, broadcaster TSN 690 in Montreal. She says nothing matters up here more than hockey. So not only did you lose, not only did you break the streak, not only were you the team that failed, you failed at what is supposed to be yours. You failed at what you think is supposed to be yours. And that's a tough reality to think about and deal with. I mean, look at it this way. Now, the United States had never valued the World Baseball Classic as much as other countries. They didn't value it as much as Japan. They didn't value it as much as the Dominican Republic. Other nations valued the World Baseball Classic more. But last year, when the U.S. won the World Baseball Classic Championship, that's not an Olympics. The World Baseball Classic, it's important, but it's not on the Olympic level. And everyone was pumped about it. The players were pumped. The fans were pumped. We were pumped because baseball is the, quote, American pastime. We, in quotes, we are supposed to be able, like, that's supposed to be our thing. And baseball can be important to the Dominican Republic and Japan and Cuba and Taiwan and everywhere, Mexico, everywhere else in the world, Canada. But it's supposed to be ours. That's how we have viewed baseball. It's the great American pastime. And it's painful when we lose to another country in baseball because that feels like what is ours is being taken from us. That's what happened to the Canadians last night. And that is what I imagine to be an extremely tough pill to swallow today, just an hour and a half north of here, north of the border. And then, again, the storyline, the transfer of power that just happened last night. It's powerful storyline. Storyline, if you are not a true fan of a sport or of a team and you're talking about, okay, I don't have a rooting interest, or once you strip away that rooting interest and you just look for storylines in sports, you found some really, really interesting ones last night. And then, you know, one more thing on the Olympics, and one more set of storylines that also provided great drama, great theater, but also unbelievable heartbreak. is around the same time that this great game is going on, during this great game, you've got the combined skiing medal rounds going on. You've got Michaela Schifrin and Lindsey Vonn, who are at two total ends of the spectrum. You've got the heartbreak for Lindsey Vonn, who is the aging athlete, her last Olympics, arguably the greatest female skier in U.S. history. In some cases, you know, when you throw in world championship wins, maybe the greatest female skier ever. Aging champion, end of her run, looking for one last medal. She's the last racer. She's got it all in front of her, and she doesn't finish the race. That's heartbreaking, and that's a story that people think about all the time. When you're sitting in your room as a kid, you're thinking about 3-2, bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded, and you think about succeeding. You never think about missing, but last night, Lindsey Vonn didn't even miss. She didn't miss the shot at the end of the game. She never even got to take the shot. By not finishing the race, she essentially dribbled off her foot. And that is a crushing reality to think about. I mean, that's everything that rips your heart out about sports. It's supposed to be, in our mind, Peyton Manning, John Elway, right off into the sunset after winning in their, you know, in their last go-around. It's supposed to be Tom Brady. Even if you don't like him, it's supposed to be Tom Brady at 40 years old, defying the laws of gravity, defying the laws of aging, and winning one more time in spite of all those challenges. And last night, Lindsey Vonn didn't even get to take the shot because she couldn't finish the race. She dribbled off her foot. And then you've got Michaela Schifrin, the 22-year-old, the next face of skiing, looking to take over from Lindsey Vonn into the silver and elated to win a second medal. First time an American's won two medals in alpine skiing since 1952 in the same Olympics. So you've got all ends of the spectrum last night. And because of the times that all these were going on, you had such unbelievable storylines going on at the same time. All right, when we come back, Ryan Scott, he's a writer at d3hoops.com. He'll join us. Plattsburgh men's Suniac tournament tomorrow night against Oswego at Memorial Hall. Middlebury Hoops out of the NESCAC tournament. Can they still get to the NCAA tournament? All that and more next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Go. It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Welcome back to Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Want to take a break from the excitement of last night's gold medal women's hockey game and move on to some local sports news involving D3 basketball. And what an exciting season it's been. It was a disappointing end for Middlebury, losing in the NESCAC quarterfinals 19-6. We'll talk about them in a minute. But Plattsburgh State still rolling in the Suniac. They're 20-4, 17-1 in the league, and they'll open up Suniac playoff play tomorrow. Let's go out to the TikTok Jewelers guest line now and find ourselves Ryan Scott from one of my favorite sites, d3hoops.com. Ryan, thanks for being with us. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Well, I appreciate you joining us. Let's start with this. When we look at Plattsburgh and how good they are and how good they have been, and we look at Middlebury, how good they are and how good they have been, how fortunate are we to have two schools in you know, an hour and a half apart that are so good?
Well, yeah, it's really awesome. I mean, obviously the Northeast part of the country has a whole lot of D3 schools that play really great basketball, but you guys are real fortunate there. Plattsburgh and Middlebury are good year in and year out.
Now, when you talk about, you say the Northeast has a lot of Division III teams, and you are right about that. D3 not as big in other parts of the country. What's kind of the breakdown? Is D3 where most of the talent, or is the Northeast where most of the D3 talent is concentrated?
Along the East Coast, kind of down through the D.C. area, and then there's a big pocket in the Midwest. Illinois, Minnesota, Wisconsin is really where the concentrations are.
Now, why is that? Why is it that D3 doesn't take off in the South? In the South, junior college is more prevalent. Why not the D3 aspect?
Well, what we're actually seeing is a lot of Southern schools getting into D3. Most of the provisional schools that are working their way in are all from the Deep South and Texas. So I think they're starting to see what Division III has to offer, and they're moving over either from junior college ranks or from the NAIA and joining up.
Now let's talk about Plattsburgh again. They'll play tomorrow in the Suniac tournament. What makes this team so good? They are long and athletic.
Well, I mean, the quick answer, Jonathan Patron is one of the best players, certainly in the SUNYAC, in the area, and I'm sure he's going to be an All-American at some level this year. The struggles they had early in the season were when he was injured and out, and they haven't lost since he's been back. Obviously, he's not the only part of the puzzle, but he drives that team.
Now, you talk about him and this team, you know, we had Coach Curl on last week, and he talked about how this team has really made a conscientious effort to defend the three, and that's been one of their big pillars of success on defense. What are you seeing in the D3 game? Is it becoming just a jump-shooting league?
Well, I think, you know, that's happening everywhere in basketball, yeah. Right? You're seeing it with the Rockets, and in large part, D3's been at the forefront of that. There have been a lot of teams focusing on three-pointers for, you know, years, sometimes decades. It's something we're very used to, and so defending the three becomes really, really vital.
Ryan, it's always tough for me when Oswego and Plattsburgh play each other in anything because I went to Oswego, I was the broadcaster for Oswego basketball, was the lead broadcaster two times, and they went to the NCAA tournament. They'll meet on Friday. Oswego's not as good this year as they've been in recent years, but can they give Plattsburgh any trouble tomorrow night?
Certainly that's possible, although, you know, Plattsburgh's played Oswego twice pretty recently, 14-point wins both times. I just think this Plattsburgh team may be a really special squad that could go a long way.
We're talking with Ryan Scott, D3Hoops.com. We just talked about Oswego on Friday. Let's fast forward. You know, we're not supposed to do this, but let's fast forward to Saturday. If they play Brockport, Brockport's given them their only loss of the SUNYAC season, 17-1 in the league. Could Brockport pull an upset in the final on Saturday?
Plattsburgh's biggest problem has been when they have too many turnovers. It's the ball handling. They've always been rebounding well. Taking care of that basketball is going to be really important. They lost to Brockport early in the season before Patron was back with the team, so hopefully he'll give them some push. But really, taking care of the ball is going to be key.
What is it like for Plattsburgh? How lucky are they? How fortunate are they? They're going to end this season with six consecutive league home games and then the entire conference tournament on their floor. You just don't see that.
Yeah, sometimes the schedules work out that way, and it's really in their favor this year. I think they're a good enough team that it wouldn't necessarily matter, but it certainly makes it easier for them and gives them a lot of confidence, especially because I think they're going to, especially if they win the conference tournament, they're going to host the first weekend of games.
Now, we're talking with Ryan Scott, D3Hoops.com here. Now, we talk about Plattsburgh. Let's move over to Middlebury. 19-6, they were a team that was ranked as high as number two in the country at one point. They end the season on three straight losses and get bounced in the first round of the NESCAC tournament. Do they have an opportunity for an at-large bid, or do that early loss in the tournament knock them out?
I think they're still in pretty good position. The NESCAC is a really strong conference, which helps their strength of schedule, which is one of the criteria that the selection committee will look at heavily. They are in pretty good position. We have at D3 Hoops a couple of guys who do some analytic work on it, and they say it's a near lock that Middlebury will still be able to get in.
Now, what makes the NESCAC so good? We call it the Little Ivy League, and they do get a lot of players that you would think maybe had some Division I aspirations, but is that the sole reason why the league is so good?
Well, academics is a big part of it. As you know, Division III basketball, there aren't athletic scholarships, so guys who are going to school are going for school. A lot of times they're paying full tuition. So if you have the academic pedigree that those schools do, you can attract a lot better athletes.
How cool is it to see guys who played Division III hoops going on to really, really prominent careers in basketball? We talk about Middlebury. Kobe Altman, the general manager of the Cavaliers, was a good player for the Panthers back in the early and mid-2000s. How rewarding is that to see for Division III as a whole?
I think it's great. It's really cool to see these guys using not just their basketball experience, but their academic credentials coming from these great schools. And it also gives greater exposure. They know if there's a really talented D3 guy, we know they're going to find them.
Now, when you watch Division III and how it's grown, are you seeing more of a respect factor nationally for D3? Because I play Division III baseball, and people say, you know, people will kind of look at you and be like, oh, you're not playing Division I. I think that's starting to change a little bit, though.
It is a little bit, and I think some of that is these guys filtering into more prominent positions. The other part of it is just so much easier to watch. You know, 20 years ago when I started following Division III, we had to wait for the scores to get updated online. You couldn't see any games. Now you can see, you know, 99% of the games are web streamed and you can watch them. And that's the key. When I talk to people and they say, well, Division III is, you know, that's not very good, I say, just watch a game. And I give them a link. And once they watch it, they understand what we've got.
Ryan Scott, D3Hoops.com, breaking down Plattsburgh and Middlebury with us. We're hoping both teams get to the NCAA tournament. Plattsburgh's a lock, even if they get upset this weekend, I have to assume.
Their case is a little sketchier. Their strength of schedule is not quite as strong as Middlebury, but we've got them at like an 80% right now. I think they're pretty safe. Obviously, in Division III, we have 43 automatic qualifiers, so there's only 21 at-large bids. And, if you know, there are upsets in conference tournaments and things that can get a little dicey. But I think Plattsburgh's pretty safe, too.
So we're rooting for two local teams to have a chance to play more postseason basketball at the NCAA level. And how cool would that be for this area? Ryan Scott, D3Hoops.com. Ryan, we appreciate it. We'll talk to you again.
Thank you very much.
Hey, thank you. There he goes, Ryan Scott. We appreciate the time. And cool, man, it's so cool to see so many local teams having opportunities to play in postseasons and play postseasons at the national level. Look, we've said this a lot. UVM men's hoops, UVM men and women's hockey have opportunities to get to NCAA tournaments every year. Then you throw in Plattsburgh men hockey, Plattsburgh women's hockey, Norwich men and women's hockey, Middlebury women's hockey, men's basketball. I mean, there's just so many good teams here. Plattsburgh now in men's hoops again is really, really good. So it's so cool to see these teams having success. And as Coach Curl told us last week, coach of Plattsburgh, if you haven't seen us play, then get out there because you're going to be pretty impressed. So that is a lot of fun. So moving on to the NFL, Julian Edelman posted a video yesterday of him rehabbing from his torn ACL. He tore his ACL on August 25th, and I'm just excited to see what Edelman has left this year. I don't think Edelman, who's now in his 30s, I don't think that he's done. I don't think we're looking at a guy, oh, let's see if he can come back one more time. I think Julian Edelman has valuable football that he can play and valuable football that he can provide to the Patriots. And look, I don't care if it's the system. I don't care if it's him. I don't care what it is. I think when he's playing in New England, I think he has an opportunity to be successful. I'm so excited to see what Edelman brings because for years it was, you know, Edelman was the known quantity at wide receiver and everybody else was the unknown. Now next year we know about Brandon Cooks. We know about if Amendola signs, we know about him. Edelman will end up being, we know about Hogan. Edelman will end up being the wild card, you know, one of the wild cards on next year's offense. We just don't know what he's going to provide. We don't know exactly what he is going to give them. I'm excited to just see how he continues to progress. I'm excited to see how he continues to work. And I am excited to see what he can provide because I think his relationship with Tom Brady, his familiarity with the offense, his familiarity with Josh McDaniels, and then the depth of that receiver room as a whole between Cooks and Hogan and what I think will be Amendola and Malcolm Mitchell and Dorsett and Riley McCarron. There's a lot of pieces there. And if Gronk is back, there's a lot of pieces there that continue to make the Patriots a very, very, very formidable offense. All right, when we come back, Christian Vasquez, Red Sox catcher, he's not happy. And you know what? He's justified. Why? That's next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night right here, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. You can always get in Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672, and we go up until 7 o'clock. And then today at 7:30, we've got NBA basketball, the new-look Cavaliers hosting the Washington Wizards. So all of that coming up. Remember, the Celtics back in action tomorrow. We'll have their game against Detroit over on 960 The Zone. I have to extend some congratulations, though, first, because Aaron Wells, who is, you know him, he used to be intern Aaron. Now he is graduate Aaron, and he is producer of Sports Saturday Aaron, and he runs a lot of our stuff in the studio when someone's on vacation or when we do a show out, like tomorrow when we're at Goodwater Brewery. So Aaron just got into Linden State. So we have to give Aaron we got intern Alec in here who's giving him some applause. And somewhere on here I've got some applause. Let's see here. Somewhere there's a clapping. I mean, it's not this. That's not the one that we want. I don't know. Did you hide it from me? I'm looking at Alec. I'm like, Alec, did you move the applause meter here? Somewhere there was applause. So we have to give. Nope, that's not it either. But all right. Anyways, Aaron deserves a lot of applause, deserves a lot of recognition. We're proud of you, buddy. We're happy for you. He's come a long way. And I'll tell you this, at 19 years old, what he is doing in this business is not easy. It's very, very, you know, getting into this business is challenging. Being good at this business is challenging, and we're trying to get better every single day. And for Aaron to be as good as he is at 19 years old and being the producer of Sports Saturday already at 19, that's pretty darn cool, and that's pretty darn rare also. So we appreciate what he's done, and he's going to go off to Linden in the fall, and he's still going to be around on the weekends for us, and I'm going to try to keep him around here as much as we possibly can. But we're happy for you, buddy. We are proud of you. Congratulations. If you want to wish Aaron congratulations, you can do so on the Town Fair Tire text line. And we got intern Alec who's clapping too, because he's also going to go to Linden and follow in the footsteps of our own great Rich Haskell. So happy for Aaron. And again, if you went to Linden or One Oaks 10, congratulations. You can. 802-655-6672. So Red Sox catcher Christian Vasquez spoke out against the new mound visit rules in baseball. He hates it. He says, quote, "I don't like it. It's too much change. They want to hurry up the game, but if I need to go 12 times for a mound visit, I need it, man, to change signs, to talk to my pitchers. Taking that away is just too much." And Christian Vasquez, look, I could not agree with you more. I am for having the game be faster. I am for having there be more action in the game. I understand that 1-0 three times a week is not fun for everybody. I understand that 3.5 hours is not fun for everybody. I get that. I'm not averse to changing baseball. I am averse to changing baseball in this way. Part of what makes baseball so great is the strategy. And you do need to talk things over at times. And I brought this up on Monday, and Arnie poo-pooed it, and some of you got on me on the text line also. And you can do so again if you want to. But there are things that need to get talked about on a baseball field. And now the new rules are saying that any trip to the mound by a catcher or an infielder counts as a trip to the mound, and you can't have more than 6 of those in the course of a game. And what I don't like about that is, what if the third baseman and the pitcher need to go over a bunt coverage? What if the third baseman is going to shift and he's going to tell you, hey, I'm going to play a little deeper here. Hey, I'm going to go to the line more. That's stuff that needs to get talked about. What if the catcher says, hey, they're stealing my signs at second base. We've got to change them up now. That's what happens in baseball. And people say, well, Brady, do it between innings. Oh, they're professionals. They should know who's covering the bunt. Well, what about when the pitcher just got traded? What if the guy just got there and he hasn't had a full spring to get all the signals down? He needs to hear it from your voice. He needs to hear it on a case-by-case basis. What if the guy is a double-A pitcher who just got called up, a triple-A pitcher who just got called up, who's an injury fill-in, and that guy needs to have the shortstop go talk to him? What if the shortstop and the pitcher don't speak English, and or don't speak the same language, rather, and they can't verbally communicate about where the shortstop's playing, who's got who on a double play? Where's the shift? Who's covering where on the bunt? Those are things that need to actually be communicated with. And you can't just tell me, oh, they're pros, they should know it. Or, oh, they all speak the language of baseball. Because other sports have built-in conversation times where you can go over nuance. When you're watching basketball, what do they do at the free throw line? Okay, when a guy's at the free throw line, you've got a player who is, you know, you've got one guy talking to the coach while everyone is on the line. You've got the team huddles up here. Hold on 1 second. There you go. Intern Alex having trouble with the phone, but I think we hung up on him, Alex, so it's okay. If you want to call in, you can. 802-655-6672. Anyways, when players go to the free throw line, they have a chance to talk to a coach. Someone's talking to the coach. When there's a foul committed, the five guys huddle up and talk about it for 10 seconds before the players get to the foul line. They have a chance to talk about things. Hey, here's what we're doing after. Are we going with the press or not? In football, you have headsets built in to position. You have headsets built into players' helmets where there's constant conversation coming about, here's what we're seeing, here's what we're doing. In the NHL, players come off the ice, okay? Players come off the ice. All right, now, intern Alec, you can answer the phone.
Hello?
So, this is a adventure in, it's Alec's second day interning. Hello? So, nobody's there, he says. Nobody's there. So, if you want to do it one more time, I'll take it. We won't even go with the intern if you want to call in for the third time. 802-655-6672. In hockey, you have time off the ice. You're playing a shift, okay? You're playing a shift, and then you come off the ice, and you can talk about nuance. In baseball, you don't have that built in. Here we go. We're getting that phone call. Let's see if we can take it now. 101.3 ESPN, Champlain Valley Game Night. What's your name? Where are you calling from?
I'm Ben from Colchester. How you guys doing?
Ben from Colchester, I appreciate it. Since we didn't screen the call first, please don't swear.
No, I won't, without a doubt.
What's Alec, going on, Ben?
This is a message to Alec and Aaron. As intern Ben from 3 years ago, who also followed Rich's footsteps to go to Linden State College, best of luck, guys. It's awesome up there.
Well, Ben, we appreciate it, man. And Alec is clapping. He's excited. Aaron's excited. We're glad it turned out well for you.
Have fun with the show, guys.
I appreciate it. There he goes. I thought he wanted to talk baseball with me. He just wanted to congratulate the interns and former intern Aaron. So good to know, though. Good to know another Linden State, not even survivor, thriver. So you can make baseball faster. I want baseball to be faster. I want it to be more action-packed. But I don't want to take away the ability to have the fundamentals be right. You get that time in other sports. It's built in for nuance. And in baseball, I want you to still be able to have that too. It's too important. The language barriers are there. The third baseman is 50 to 100 feet away from the pitcher. He can't hear him in a stadium full of 40,000 on a Saturday night. You have to be able to talk about it. I understand why Christian Vasquez is upset. I'm upset too about it. I'm for some of the changes. Less time between innings, sure. Get the bullpen guy out there quicker. You know, don't let him lollygag in from the pen. I'm fine with that too. Even if you want to make it so that a guy can throw to two batters instead of one, so there's less pitching changes, I could even get on board with that too. But what I'm not on board with is taking away the ability to have in-game adjustments and in-game communication, because that is what makes baseball what it is. That's what makes baseball so challenging, is the ability to adjust in game, and you need to do that on the fly by actually talking. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. The NHL totally dropped the ball. And you know what? The NHL usually drops the ball. The players aren't in the Olympics. That hurts the sport. But also, get this. During NBA All-Star weekend, during the NBA All-Star break, the NHL did not properly showcase its sport. Five games on Monday, three on Wednesday. Five games on Monday, three on Wednesday. At a time where the NBA is off, you had a chance to dominate the schedule and get yourself out there and get the exposure out there for your sport, and you didn't take it. Five games on Monday, three on Wednesday. There were a bunch on Tuesday, though. But two of those 3 days, you could have had, you didn't load up your schedule. NBA wasn't playing. It was yours. People are mad at the NHL already because it's not in the Olympics. People are pumped about hockey because the Olympics are going on. You had a chance to showcase us the best players in the world, and you chose not to at a time when you could capitalize at least on the Olympic interest, and you could capitalize on the NHL or on the NBA not being in session, and you chose to do neither of those things. And the NHL and their fans wonder why they're fourth in the popularity rankings and why soccer is quickly growing in this country and soccer fandom is growing above the NHL. People say to me, Brady, why do we not talk more hockey during the football season? We talk more hockey now. But why do you not spend November talking about hockey? Well, hockey is behind baseball, the NBA, college basketball, football, and college football, and soccer interest in this country is passing the NHL too. the NHL had a chance to showcase itself and didn't. Like, this is why hockey is where it's at. You did not, you had the Olympics going on. You chose not to send the players. At least here we are all talking about hockey. You had a chance to show us more hockey in a time when the schedule was largely open. Nothing else competing professional sports-wise, and you didn't do it. And that is disheartening. That is disheartening. If I was going to sit down and be super invested in hockey, this would be a week to do it. I would watch. I have the NHL package at home. I would watch Connor McDavid. I would watch Eichel if he wasn't hurt. I would watch, you know, I'd go and watch Jonathan Toews. I mean, these are guys I would go watch if you would put it on TV when the NBA wasn't playing. Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3 ESPN.com. Look, I have to say this too. You hockey purists, feel free to text in. I like shootouts because they're exciting, because of the theater of the moment and the drama. But I'm with you after last night that shootouts should not determine the gold medal, because last night was too good to just be decided by what really is an exhibition, you know, a one-on-one skills competition. I like the shootout. I like penalty kicks because, again, theater and drama, it's made for movies. I mean, the whole time that I was watching the shootout, all I could think about was D2 Mighty Ducks. I mean, who remembers this one? D2 Mighty Ducks, Gordon Bombay talking to Julie the Cat Gaffney.
Julie, you got the fast glove. I know this kid's move. Triple deke, glove side. Anticipated and you got it.
What if he goes stick side?
He's fancy. He'll go glove. Don't hesitate. Let's go.
That's all I was thinking about last night. It was great, but it was too good to end that way. All right, that'll do it for us. Thanks to intern Alec. Thank you to old intern Ben, who called in. Congratulations to intern Aaron. And thank you to intern Nathan. We'll see you tomorrow, everybody. The Huddle, live from Goodwater Brewery in Williston, 101.3 ESPN.